Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Bringing you the second of my Christmas programmes, beginning with some seasonal cheer, a spattering of some of our most well-known Christmas carols. That's with Monsignor Philip Whitmore.
Joyful news of Christ's birth has inspired Christians throughout the centuries to sing the praises of God. Christmas carols are among the best loved of all forms of sacred music. In England, carols were very popular in the later Middle Ages. One of the few that has survived more or less intact over the centuries is the Coventry Carol. Many carols use folk melodies, so it's quite hard to say just how old they are. In their present form, they're usually from the 19th or 20th centuries. That's to say, they were discovered and arranged for publication and popular use in recent times. One of the great pioneers of research into English folk song was a man called Cecil Sharp. Here's a Christmas carol that he discovered for us at Chipping Campden in Gloucestershire. Another important figure in the rediscovery of English folk songs was Ralph Vaughan Williams. He was also interested in hymns. In fact, he composed a number of well-known hymns himself, and he edited the English Hymnal. One of the Christmas carols we associate with him uses a folk melody that he discovered in Sussex, still known today as the Sussex Carol. After the Reformation in England, carol singing more or less died out. Certainly there was no place for carols in the Reformed liturgy, because it was forbidden to sing non-scriptural texts in church. This meant no hymn singing at all, except for the Psalms. One of the first Christmas carols to establish itself in England after the Reformation was While Shepherds Watched. And of course, if you look closely at the text, you'll see that it's practically all taken from St. Luke's Gospel. So it was the first Christmas hymn, and for more than 80 years, the only one permitted to be used in Anglican churches. Meanwhile, the English Catholic community was either underground or in exile on the continent. one of the major centres was Douai in Flanders. At the English college in Douai, priests were trained to serve on the English mission. And here came to birth one of the most famous of all Christmas carols, O Come All Ye Faithful, or Adeste Fideles, to use its Latin title. Both the words and the music are attributed to John Francis Wade, who was a professor there during the 18th century. It was first published in England in the 1780s, and it's been a firm favourite ever since. Many of the carols we sing today are of German origin. In fact, so too are many of the traditions surrounding our celebration of Christmas, such as the Christmas tree or Tannenbaum.
O Tannenbaum, O Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter. Du grüßt dich nun zur Sommerzeit.
Unlike their Anglican counterparts, the Lutheran reformers encouraged hymn singing. Listen to the traditional German carol Es ist ein Rose entsprungen, associated with the 17th century Lutheran composer Michael Praetorius. One of the best-loved of all German carols is In Dulci Jubilo. The text is half in Latin and half in German. J.S. Bach used the tune in a choral setting and also in some of his organ chorale preludes. But it's best known to English-speaking congregations in a 19th century arrangement by Robert Pearsall, which is half in Latin and half in English. Probably the best-known German, or rather Austrian, carol is Stille Nacht, or Silent Night. This was written on Christmas Eve 1818 for the village church in Oberndorf, just north of Salzburg. Since then, it's taken the world by storm. By the 19th century, hymn singing had come to be accepted in the Church of England. Members of the Wesley family produced many of the new hymn texts. Charles Wesley's Christmas hymn, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, was matched with a tune by Felix Mendelssohn to produce one of the best-loved of all Christmas carols. Mendelssohn had originally written the tune for secular words, and he wasn't sure it would work with a sacred text. He needn't have worried. Speaking of angels singing leads me on to one or two French Christmas carols. The French had their own tradition of Noël, as they were called, few of which are familiar to English speakers today. But I think you might recognise this one, adapted to English words.
Angels sing above, my sweet is singing all the place, and the mountains in
tried singing that Gloria after a few Christmas drinks. It's quite a challenge. Another popular French carol using a folk melody from the Provençal region is known as the March of the Kings.
Dessus le grand chemin, de changer d'ombres et de d'amour, de grandir.
If you're familiar with that tune, it could be because you've heard it in the version used by Georges Bizet in his suite L'Arlésienne. Wherever you're spending Christmas, I do hope you'll have the opportunity to celebrate by singing some of the great heritage of carols that have come down to us over the centuries, from different countries, even from different continents. There's some very fine music among them, and how right that it should be so. Only the best is good enough to sing the praises of the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace.
Well, thanks there go to music historian Monsignor Philip Whitmore for that beautiful programme. He'll be back again at this same time next week. And now, on a totally different note, we join Carmelite Reginald Foster, better known as our popular Latin lover, for our weekly rendezvous. But do watch the change of pace and tone. Father, it's Christmas time. We call it Christmas. The Italians call it Natale.
Well, Natale, of course, in Latin, Natalis is the birthday. So Natalis is the birthday of Christ. Natus est.
Yeah.
Okay, he was born. Just for your listeners, this is Leo the Great, 440 to 461. And he was elected in September. His first Christmas homily, the greatest Latin in the world. I'd just like your people to hear two lines. Salvator noster delectissimi hodie natus est, gaudiamus. Neque enim locum fas est esse tristitiae, ubi natalis est vitae. Quae consumto mortalitatis timore ingerit nobis de promissa eternitate laetitiam.
In English?
Today, our Savior has been born. Let us rejoice. For there is no reason that there be a place for sadness where there is the birthday of life. Which life? The fear of mortality having been done away with gives to us joy about eternity having been promised. This is Leo the Great. That's his first line, the first homily that he had about Christmas in the year 440. If you know Latin, you can understand this. 1600 and so many years ago. And he says down below, exultet sanctus, quia propinquat ad palmam, gaudiat peccator, quia invitator ad veniam, animator in gentilis, quia vocator ad vitam. He said, this holy person should exult because this person approaches to the palm of victory. The sinner should be happy because the sinner is invited to forgiveness. And the pagan should be encouraged because the pagan is called to life.
Life, vita.
Vita. Mm. And I say, friends, I tell the students so often in class, if you have nothing to say, just translate this for your faithful and sit down and shut up. Because this is so glorious.
Leo, that's your Christmas message to our listeners, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
If you had to pick some music to go with it, what would it be?
Well, I don't know what the music here. The music is hard to, because we didn't know Roman music. Of course, you know, the old Adeste Fideles. Was the 18th century, the organist of a cathedral there in England, and he put the music to this the famous song of Adeste Fideles from the 1600s, 1700s, where Adeste Fideles, Laeti Triumphantes, you know, Venite, Venite in Bethlehem. Present, O faithful, happy and triumphant. Come, come to Bethlehem. Natum videte regem angelorum. Look at the King of the angels having been born. Hey, we can sing the thing together. Natum videte regem angelorum. Venite, venite. Videte ad Dominum. Everyone knows the the music.
How would the Romans have greeted each other on Christmas Day?
Of course, they didn't have Christmas Day. And the only reason a lot of people don't realize is that Christmas ended up more or less on the 25th of December, because the Romans at that time were celebrating the Sol Invictus, unconquerable sun, because they realized that the sun turned around, on the 21st of December and started becoming bigger until you get to summer, June 21st. So the Romans had the invincible sun on the 22nd or 21st of December. And so the Christians said, why don't we put, instead of the pagan thing, why don't we put the birth of Jesus? Because Jesus maybe was born in August. We don't know this. Or in July or June or May. We don't know this. Got it? This is all, has nothing to do with the birth of Jesus at all. It was to counterbalance the pagan thing.
A big thank you there once again to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, the Pope's own Latinist. He'll be back again in the new year. Finally, why don't you join me in a church hidden away in the heart of Rome, as I meet up with our Professor of Fine Arts, Breda Innes.
Today we're in the Church of St. Maria in Via, St. Mary on the Way, which is in the heart of Rome. Professor Breda Innes is about to send us a Christmas greetings card from a crib. The tradition of making cribs at Christmas to celebrate the Nativity began in the 13th century.
Because St. Francis of Assisi was the first person to celebrate midnight mass on Christmas night with a crib, with live oxen and donkeys, live animals.
Well, this one isn't alive. It's not dead either, is it? There's a lot going on here. I think for our listeners who are not familiar with cribs, we ought to say that, generally speaking, there are three elements in a crib, aren't there? There's the Nativity, obviously. Then there's the Annunciation with the angels. And finally, there's always a tavern scene. Am I right, Breda?
Yes, this is obviously what came afterwards, because the original scene itself is just the central scene, the Nativity. Mary, the child Jesus, and St. Joseph, and shepherds, and the two animals, the ox and the ass.
You know what's missing, Breda? The shepherds.
The shepherds are generally there for Christmas, and the 6th of January they're replaced by the Magi.
I don't know where they'll find the place to put them. I'm quite wrong. I spy a shepherd, actually, who's fast asleep. There's always a shepherd that's asleep in these cribs.
Here, in fact, we have a little bit of everything from the time of St. Francis, and this is shown in one of Giotto's frescoes in the higher church at Assisi, with the crib St. Francis himself had in the past.
So what about this crib, Breda? Let's describe it a little bit. The central element is the Nativity scene. There are a lot of angels above this temple, actually. Very often they use temples, don't they?
To give a sense of drama to the background and make it very, very Italian in its own sense. And also, you think that Rome is the home of Christianity in the practical sense. I mean, apart from Jerusalem and everything in the past, but
it used to be pagan. Therefore, a lot of sacred Rome is built over pagan temples.
Pagan temples, but also they Christianized pagan things. So here you have a large Roman archway, like a triumphal arch, in the middle, on top of which you can see the scene, which is full of gyrating angels. They all seem so light and happy. Well, they seem like they're just going to float out of the crib. And then below that, then you see Mary in pink robes, blue mantle, and the child Jesus with a very elaborate halo around his head. And
I thought that in Italian tradition they only put child Jesus into the crib after Christmas Eve.
Exactly, yes. But this is actually a permanent crib. In the 1700s it was done in Naples. This is a genuine Neapolitan crib, but it's so famous that they actually leave it up all the year. To take a child to see this here, it would bring him into the fantasy of the world of the birth in a manger in the Holy Land. Generally, children, looking at the details, they'll be able to get in little by little into the story and understand the simplicity, the sacred quality of the story itself. Here in the front, I see they have very elaborately garbed magi.
We're talking silk and damask, aren't we? And lace, and real lace.
Yes, and old lace, and old silk and damask.
Frida, correct me if I'm wrong, but collecting figurines was the pastime of wealthy Neapolitans, because these are not just ordinary figurines, they're very special, aren't they?
Yeah.
Are they just wired inside? Because they seem to be gesticulating and almost movable.
Yes, but generally the inside is made of different types of materials, and the hands and the neck and face are made of porcelain and painted. Now, it was a tradition also in Naples for important artists to hand paint or prepare the faces for the different images. And it was considered an honour for an artist to do this, because in that way they participated in the miracle of the birth. Here what they try to do is to bring it as near as possible to a Roman daily reality, so that you see on the top here you see a house with the clothes hanging out over the balcony. And then
there's lots of food around here.
Tons. Well, that's Italian. What's nice here is this fountain, this tiny fountain, which looks like a cross between the Bocca della Verità and something else. But you can actually see little strings hanging down over the basin of the fountain. It makes it look like real water. They've tried in every way to make it look realistic.
Yeah, there's a fire there, a fireplace
yes,
there.
Yeah.
There's someone stoking the fire.
Yes. Look like they're going to make pizzas or something like that.
In the tavern, of course, with all the hams hanging and the salamis hanging on the tavern door. No?
Yeah. Here you have a little bit of everyday life. You have daily life in terms of houses and work and housework and cooking and buying food. And over here, evening type of entertainment and whatever. Then architecturally, you have all these Roman type ruins with the Corinthian columns, etc. And then way behind in the distance, you have against the blue horizon, a view of the Bay of Naples. So there's a combination here of Naples and Rome. Nothing takes away from the central scene. It pulls you in. The central scene, also look at the expression on the face of one of the men near Mary, a sense of ecstasy, total ecstasy and meditation, which contrasts, obviously, with the faces of the people beside.
And many thanks there too to Professor of Fine Arts Breda Ennis, who's currently working at the American University of Rome, and who took the time to go to the Church of Santa Maria in Via with me to illustrate this beautiful crib for us. And that brings me up to time. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I do hope you enjoyed yourselves. By the way, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org.
Laudator Jesus Christus.